Chapter 1. Mustering the Garrison. A conflagration raged across the dark landscape of the ship's furnace. Thrust up from the ground, the twisted silhouettes of the artifacts reminded T'Kel of broken fingers. Tendrils of flame roamed the armor glass chamber like hungry scavengers, devouring everything and spitting forth smoke to obscure this grim vista of uncreation. It tasted acrid and bitter, rising up in all-consuming fumes. Through the gaps in the smoke, snatches of structure and form were revealed. A blade blackened by fire melting, a hull twisted by the immense temperature of the furnace. Everything burned, and he was the architect of it. From an observation platform, T'Kel looked down upon the destruction he had wrought, and wept. Heat prickled his skin, even through the armor glass.
"I preside over a massacre," he murmured, gripping the haft of his thunderhammer for reassurance. "Such glory and beauty rendered moot by my unmaking of it."
T'Kel had little poetry in his soul. Logic made no room for it, but felt it seize him roughly in that moment of abject annihilation. Few warlords could claim such a feat of desolation, and yet he, a forge master, a servant of craft and restoration, had done this. T'Kel smiled bitterly at the irony.
"Forge father," he reminded himself. "This grief," he uttered to the shadows, "it's as if you have died again."
Though he had not borne witness to the Primarch's passing, T'Kel knew in his heart that his father was gone. It was said that their voice, the voice of the recently deceased, was the first thing to fade from memory. For T'Kel, it would never fade, even at the end. His father's last words to him were ingrained as indelibly as the honor scars carved into his onyx-black flesh. The unthinkable had come to pass. Ash was all that remained.
"There's nothing to be spared, brother."
He recognized the voice as belonging to Raz Obek. In his reverie, T'Kel had almost forgotten the Firebearer was also present at the burning of Vulcan's artifacts, both of them standing in what amounted to little more than a corridor from which to witness the destruction. His armor was scalloped green ceramite, furnished with a cloak of red leathery drake hide. A helmet hung from his belt by a strap, a dark fin of metal, cutting it into two equal hemispheres. A shorter version, also deep ocean green, divided his scalp, but was made of shorn hair, not metal. As ever, he appeared stern. Raz Obek was stoic as granite, a trait that extended to his emotions as well as his deeds. His question was asked not as a plea, nor affected by grief, but as an inquiry of fact.
"This ship in which we stand, the weapon it carries on its hull," said T'Kel, looking to the upper vaults and the flickering shadows that haunted them.
His bionic eye auto-focused as it chased details in the darkness above.
"And five other artifacts, seven in all, one for each of the realms."
Obek took a step towards the armor glass. It was all that stood between them and the furnace. His red eyes narrowed as he sought the shapes of the things T'Kel had been charged to destroy. He had never seen the wonders of Vulcan's creation. Even the ship was new to him, and T'Kel assumed curiosity drove his brother captain. An inferno raged inside the great heart forge of the Chalice of Fire, as red as the forge master's armor. Nothing ever made could withstand its heat, and there was nothing but blackened metal and a growing field of ash for Obek to see.
"A pity to see father's work undone, but better that it should not fall into a traitor's hands." "He said much the same to me," uttered T'Kel. "No wonder he chose you to lead the garrison."
Captain Obek stiffened at the remark, confirming what T'Kel had always suspected. Obek thought he was being punished. Prometheus, the moon of Nocturne, its spaceport and barracks, was not a noble fortress to protect with his life. It was his prison, to be incarcerated in until his death.
"Though
said Tekel when no reply was forthcoming.
I understand you have a different name for yourselves.
Obeck half turned, and his draconic warplate caught the firelight in such a way as to give an even more feral aspect.
There is only one name that matters, he said at last.
At this, Tekel nodded.
Yes.
The inferno had died to a flickering flame, the roar becoming a dulcet crackling. Smoke had blackened the armor glass as if hiding the shame of what had been done, or rather, undone.
You said you needed my help, Forgefather, said Obeck.
It was his last order to me before he went to Istvan V.
Again Obeck reacted, this time a hardening of the jaw.
And what would you have me do?
What you have never done, said Tekel. Leave, Prometheus.
Xandu saw the burning man in his dreams. The figure had no face, no markings on his armor from which to discern his legion or rank, but he burned eternally. He could not remember how long he had been seeing the burning man, or even the triggering event for the vision manifesting in the first place, only that it was ever-present, gnawing at the edge of his conscious mind and waiting for Xandu to let down his guard so that the apparition could be born again, as a nightmare rendered in flame. At first Xandu thought he might be the burning man, and that he was looking into a dream mirror that portended his own death. The sense of imminent mortality remained whenever the burning man came to visit, but after several such meetings, Xandu came to realize that the apparition was someone else, something else, an anachronism or a future echo. When asked, Chaplain Zaul had suggested it could be a metaphor for penance, that the burning man might represent one of the fiery dooms that awaited the wicked and the cruel. Not since Nykeia had librarians walked amongst their number, and Xandu did not believe he was such an individual, latent or otherwise. He only knew that every time he closed his eyes, the burning man would come to him, his body coursing in perpetual flame, a legionary, forever damned. As he woke, Xandu became aware of a feverish sweat lathering his body, a spume of breath ghosted in the air despite the stultifying heat of the chamber. It, like his dream, was a phantom, inexplicable, impossible to grasp.
Merciful Vulcan, he gasped,
the burden of the memory still heavy. His hearts raced and he willed them to slow down.
Breathe, breathe.
Naked, he stepped from a dais through a ring of shimmering haze and padded across a carpet of burning coals. The chamber was dark, but Xandu saw well enough without the light. He had missed something, though, and as he reached for his armor and the sheathed blade upon the nearby rack, a voice intruded on the quietude.
Dark dreams, Brother Xandu.
Xandu turned. Obeck!
They haven't addled your reflexes, Firefist.
The brother captain nodded at the blade in Xandu's hand, which he had drawn on instinct.
They do little for my peace of mind, he admitted, lowering the short sword.
Xandu smiled and wasn't surprised to see it go unreciprocated.
Perhaps a change of scenery will help.
Xandu's brow furrowed, but Obeck had already turned.
Don your armor and then come and find me.
The blade slid through the servitor's guard, piercing its power core and abruptly ending the duel inside the battle cage. Blood and oil stained the floor. Aknun Zen left the sword impaled, still trembling from the strength of his blow as he went to the weapons rack and took up a spear. Admiring the sharpness of the tip in the sodium half-light, he banged the ferrule hard on the floor of the battle cage to begin the next bout. A lumbering hulk of a servitor came for him on reverse-jointed limbs. From its left appendage, an electro-flail rapidly unspooled and then crackled as it activated. A studded glove encased its right arm, exuding an energy hum. Zen tossed the spear up, caught it in a reverse grip, and threw it. The servitor advanced two more steps before the spear took out its vital organs, again ending the duel. Next came a hammer and a fresh opponent, then a glaive, and after that three variations of chain weapon. Zen had reached his ninth bout when he felt a presence behind him that made him stop. He was wearing loose-fitting training fatigues and sat down cross-legged easily, his back away from the door to the battle cage as he addressed the newcomer.
"Have you come to fight me, Brother Captain?"
he asked.
"Am I to be instructed, or have I already learned all I must?"
Zen thought he heard a snort of derision, but saw it for what it was. Caution. As he waited for an answer, Zen felt the scars on his back itch as he flexed his shoulder blades and stretched to keep stiffness at bay whilst he rested. A litany of honours cut curves and walls into his skin in the sigil dialect of Nocturne. Symbolism mattered to the people of the volcanic world, and so it mattered to its transhuman sons, too. Zen had won almost every honour possible for him to obtain. Few warriors in the Legion, alive or dead, were so decorated. But a mark had eluded him, and now would forever do so. The rising flame, sigil of Vulcan's pyre guard. Memory of it, or rather lack of it, caused a mote of anger to rise in Zen's heart. He knew it was unworthy, but had no means of shackling the emotion. Raz's voice brought him back round.
"How many more of those things do you intend to kill, Flamesmote?"
Cybernetic bodies and parts littered the battle cage. Oil painted it in arterial sprays like a pugilist's canvas. 18 more servitor drones stood in their ready stations, inert, eyes dull, and absent of motility.
"All of them!"
Raz came forwards, encroaching into Zen's peripheral vision. The brother captain had his armor on. He was also armed, a bolter flamer strapped to his back. Kneeling down, he picked up the hammer Zen had used to stave in a servitor's metal skull.
"Is there something you need, brother captain?"
Zen asked, unable to keep the impatience out of his voice after a brief silence. Raz set down the hammer and stood up.
"I may have a better use for your sword arm."
Far from instilling him with a sense of righteous purpose, the vow had left Zaul enervated. Even in the reclusium, he could find no succor. As the serfs bathed and cleansed his armor with unguents, he reflected on the bitterness he felt and how it had come to pass. Even gripping his rosarius and reciting the canticles of faith and endurance brought him no comfort. He called to mind the lectures of Nomos Raitan on self-sacrifice and the garnering of strength through suffering. But still clarity would not come, and the heady fug of despair weighing him down refused to lift.
"Vulcan is dead," he murmured,
causing the serfs to stir and glance, afraid at the chaplain's dark mood. His warplate felt heavy, as if the power feeding it had bled dry, and his limbs ached. A stifling air seemed to fill his warhelm, and he reached for the skeletal faceplate with a trembling, gauntleted hand.
"Is this grief?" he wondered, "or the absence of faith? How can I minister to these warriors if my own spirit is broken?"
Zaul stared until his eyes met the tattooed face of Gorog Krask.
"Brother Chaplain?"
It took Zaul a few seconds to realize Krask had addressed him. Krask awaited an answer, except Zaul had no memory of the question, only that he had been asked. The reveries were happening all too often.
"I came here to the reclusium,"
offered Krask, his drake-scaled plate a thing of terrible beauty and palpable violence.
"For sanctification. You said you would perform the rites over my armor?"
Zaul nodded, still weary, but remembering.
Yes, yes, of course. Step forwards, brother."
Seemingly at ease again, Krask obeyed and bowed his head before the chaplain. Krask cut a huge figure in his armor, and Zaul had to look up at the fire drake. Banishing the serfs, glad to be rid of their cloying presence, Zaul uttered the rites, but the benediction felt hollow. It was. He spoke of Vulcan, of his return to the mountain and presence beyond death.
"Is he with us, brother chaplain?"
asked Krask, his tone hopeful and devout.
"Yes."
You are of the Igniacs?
I am, brother.
And can you see the Primarch still?
Zal paused, recognizing that the sons who remained needed hope, something to shore up their spiritual wounds. Zaul had heard talk of resurrection. One of the legionaries who had brought Vulcan back, one of the Pyre Guard, no less. It had been a miracle, having crossed the storm and returned home. Raitan had told him right before the attack, Atellus Numion claims that Vulcan isn't dead. The miraculous was not fated to last. Vulcan had stayed dead, his body now ash, and all hope of his revivification ash along with it. A bitter blow, the latest in many that had led to this moment and Zaul's crisis. He said none of this to Krask, and answered him instead, saying, I can still see the Primarch. He is with us always. Krask raised his head as the rites concluded. Nodding to Zaul, he noticed the chaplain staring into a shadowy alcove.
Is he here now?
Yes.
Vulcan lives,
Krask murmured. Since Istvan, this phrase had become a defiant battle cry and statement of belief that had reached as far as Nocturne. Over the last few days, or for some, months, it had become an acknowledgement of the opposite, and a wilting reassurance that the Primarch lived on in his Sons of the Forge.
Yes, Zaul replied softly. Vulcan lives.
But as Krask left the reclusium and the chaplain to his thoughts, Zaul saw nothing in the alcove but darkness. Alone, finally, he removed his helm to take a shuddering breath, then snarled as one of the serfs returned. The lowly female recoiled and shrank before the chaplain, who felt immediately contrite. Zaul reached out to apologize, but stopped when he saw the prophet's scroll in the serf's tiny hands.
What is this?
Lord Obeck sent it.
The brother captain did not approve of formality. Zaul barely noticed the serf retreat back into the shadows as he read what was inked upon the scroll. His eyes narrowed as he reached the end.
What are you up to, Obeck?
Zebdu Var watched as Nocturne burned. He liked it. On the moon of Prometheus, the Vigil Hall offered an unparalleled vista of the world below. Hewn from obsidian armor glass, it could withstand a broadside from a cruiser, or even a starfort. Resilient, though it certainly was, it made for a much better watchtower than a battlement. From this vantage in the bastion orbiting high above Nocturne, Var saw everything in wondrous slowness. It was the time of trial, when the world voiced its anger and its people suffered or died, and yet survived. Swathes of pyroclastic cloud rolled like tsunamis across the surface, and the gouts of fire spewing from its volcanoes were distant blooms of flaring light. Each fresh eruption expelled a huge trunk of smoke, billowing upwards into a pearlescent white dome, framed by a ragged grey crown of smoke and cinder. As he keenly observed the detonating caldera, Var had to imagine the thunder, because the almost balletic display played out in silence. He imagined the fire, too, the endless swathes of it, the scent of smoke, the acrid taste in his mouth, the near-suffocating heat. Var had to resist the urge to ignite a fire of his own as he watched the trauma of the pyroclasm unfold. Others in the Legion shared his love of fire, but none possessed a mania quite as pronounced as Var.
It's beautiful,
he whispered, edging closer, and caught sight of his reflection in the glass. Eyes the colour of hot coals glared hungrily from a face ravaged by knots of scar tissue. His skin looked leathern and cratered from countless burns. His lips had almost fused to his flesh and were nearly indiscernible from the rest of his face. Nearly hairless, his scalp had sprouted wiry tufts between canyons of self-inflicted burn wounds. Var knew he appeared monstrous, but accepted it as a burden of his calling. His only regret in that moment was the absence of his flamers, and he clenched and unclenched his gauntleted fists as if enacting a kinetic memory.
"I see you,"
he uttered to the fiery hell below.
"I see you, Father."
Brother Captain Obeck was waiting, but Var had needed to experience this first, to watch Nocturne burn as he always did during the time of trial, even though it never left him sated.